guy, Chinese guy. I have dabbled in the arts a little bit, you know, in terms of painting and a little bit of sculpture. Once I messed around with knitting a big rug, I couldn't wait till the damn thing was finished. It was utterly boring.
But you continue to do it, you don't stop.
No, if I have a single, but I stop that general thing after I'm finished with whatever I'm on. I have, for example, six or seven, because a couple of those manuscripts may be stuck together, but I have that many manuscripts I'm working on now in terms of the writing hobby, if you want to call it that.
You've mentioned several times that you do a lot of
photography. Photography has been a major hobby. I don't, at 10, I was developing my own pictures. Age 10, I bought a camera for 40 cents, and the films were a dime. And I learned how to develop Univex. Remember, Univex camera. And I would develop those little 00 rolls. And then later, my daddy bought me one Christmas season, I remember, when everybody was getting gifts and stuff. I begged for an enlarger. And we took every cent we had. The family spent all $10 to buy me an enlarger. You can imagine what kind of enlarger it was for $10. I used that thing for years and years and would spend hours and hours in the dark room trying to perfect prints and enlargements and vignettes, you know, whatever I was doing. So photography has always been.
And you're still involved?
Still do, except I don't do darkroom work. I don't have time for the darkroom work. So now I try to. I have at least 25,000 slides that I've taken all over the world that I'll probably never look at again. Many, many countries. You know.
You're traveling. It was due to your project and also for pleasure, I would think.
Not so much for a hobby. You know, I hate my good friend. One of my very good friends, who's a Florida friend, Gary Heskey, who was a financial advisor to five presidents, a Harvard-trained economist who was also a middleweight fighter. An interesting guy. Just sent me after his, he and Raymond, he is a German. He's a Viennese. He's an Austrian. She is a Moroccan Jewess who speaks fluent French and teaches French, as a matter of fact, and Italian, and all that stuff, and is a fantastic pianist and a great painter. All those things. He thinks she's particularly uncultured. He just sent me 30-page manuscript about his trip to. He writes me every week. One of the most remarkable minds I think I've ever known. He knows everybody who's ever been worth knowing. You know, when he goes to Russia, that they take him right to the Kremlin to talk to the big bosses. He's a brilliant guy, but he has made a tremendous impact on these last few years. Because we have aged in slightly different ways, and he's almost crippled from his athletic indiscretions. So he had bad knees and hips, but I sort of treat him almost as his orthopedic surgeon, using exercise as a way to enhance his function. I don't know why I started talking about Heskey.
Where does he live?
He lives in Baltimore, and but mostly in West Palm Beach.
That's
a different life
travel.
We live. Yeah, travel. I don't like to travel. I don't like the inconvenience of travel. My wife loves it and certainly doesn't mind it. But this place we have in Florida has been really the place we go back and forth to. So that's really winnowed out of much of the travel. I don't mind taking the trip. For instance, I would go to Venice for a week. That's the kind of travel I like to go to. Paris for a week. But I don't like trips where you're in the Orient and packing and unpacking to go from one city to another. I had enough of that when I did my tours in the United States, when I think I may have mentioned I was on 3 or 4 television shows in one day in 4 different cities.
Promoting?
Selling books. Yeah, on tour, author tour, that kind of stuff.
With these local shows?
Oh, no. As I say, in different cities in one day.
Were they local to the city, or...?
We would sometimes have to get on an airplane and go from city to city to be on, like, Boston, New York, Philadelphia in one day. Sometimes with 3 or 4 radio shows at the same time in those particular cities. It was a lot of schlepping.
Did you have to do that with every book, or was it the initial book?
I only did it with one book. I never toured with any of the others. I did it with the first book, which is the only one that was really a kind of a bestseller. The others, I've ended up giving away, which I do. You know, if anybody calls me up and says, I heard about it. Have you ever written another book? And I say, yeah, I'll send you one. I do. I've not made a commercial success out of it. These are really my own fault. Much of it was due to that. None of these at all. And so that precluded that for a while.
Were the other books also published by Brown Little?
No, the second one, interesting story. Second one was bought by Simon Schuster. I waited a year. The editor and I really didn't get along because he never did anything, and they had promised to have the book out in a few weeks. And I got mad and said, I don't want you guys to publish a book. I'll take it back. That day I sold it to Rodale Press, who had known about it.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. R-O-D-E-L?
R-O-D-A-L-E. Rodale. And Rodale Press, you know, they do Prevention Magazine. They're
terrible.
He's a Jewish guy, by the way, who is no longer calls himself Bob Rodale. Yeah. But I never went on any tours for that book. Then I decided that book wasn't really right. I took that book back from them too and said, look, you guys have decided not to promote it. That wasn't their deal. And they didn't fuss with me about it. They didn't want lawsuits. I didn't want to get into any either. I took the book and redid it myself. So the book I gave you is the redone version of the second book, The Walking. And I did the photographs all over. An appendix in the back of the book and all that stuff, so I approved the book. Next time I think I'll go back to the publisher and do it the conventional way and then sell it. I don't relish the thought of the entrepreneurial mode is not mine. I've tried to do my best at it and I never have. It just doesn't work well.
But the accomplishment is doing it.
The accomplishment is in the field of exercise, for me, the accomplishment is wrestling with one essential question, and that is we have, you know, it's almost like what AIDS is in the sick area. We have a disease that's totally preventable. The dysfunction that comes from inactivity is also preventable, and yet we can't get people to do it. It's almost a parallel kind of story, although it's seriousness. Quite different, one from the other. But I'm constantly frustrated by the fact that you can't get people to take care of themselves in multiple ways that are easy once learned.
Dr. Schwartz, could you give us the name of Millie's businesses? You said she was in interiors. Could we have the name of Millie's businesses? You said she was an interior designer?
Yeah, Millie Schwartz Interiors.
And she had an art gallery?
Yeah, and it's called the Reynolds Gallery.
And she's still working full-time, even though
she's thinking of stepping down from her businesses, selling the building, giving it to her kids, whatever, and spending more time doing other things, maybe going back and finishing her degree, which she never did, and a bunch of... She's the kind of woman who would be busy from morning till night when she's not there. I'm sure, because she's a ball of energy. And she works out, too.
Using your exercise method?
Of course, to avoid beatings.
Well, Dr. Schwartz, I certainly, for one, have enjoyed these three sessions a lot.
Well,
I think
it's hard for me to believe. I consider my... The overriding notion I have about my life is that I've been damn lucky. You know, most of my friends are far more talented in multiple respects. They never got quite as lucky as I did. I've been lucky to because ideas of strange ideas, arcane notions, weird hypotheses come to me readily. They're all better equipped to implement my ideas than I am to implement my ideas. It's a terrible thing that they don't get the ideas because they know what to do with it. They are technically able. I'm surprisingly unable at the technical level, despite all my various experience in the medical and physiologic field and stuff like that. It's the essence of the idea that I like. And then when the hard work starts, I want to hand it to somebody else. And that's been... I've been lucky enough to be able to do that.
Well, I think we make our own luck as well. And the talent has to have been there for you to succeed, and I think I also believe that somebody that feels happy in what they're doing also succeeds due to that.
I think I did that with psychiatry. I think it was a very selfish, narcissistic thing that I think my patients benefited by, because otherwise psychiatry, going to a psychiatrist can be a drag. I think somebody there has to be looking for new experience in order to take old problems and revisit them. And that's not the only way to practice psychiatry, but that's the way I chose to practice. And I felt it was our the product of our respective energies to make every one of those sessions as formidable as possible. And that means that almost any technique will work if both people are working it. But, you know, there are stories of Ernest Jones, the great British psychoanalyst, who, it is said, analyzed people for 6 years and they never heard his voice. I wasn't that kind of psychiatrist. You know, they heard my voice plenty.
So he just sat there and had the type of face?
Yeah, well, you know, he was behind them. And the analysts were sitting on the chair behind the couch. And so he might clear his throat or something like that. That's, you know, he's living.
Would you mind if gave the files a copy of your tape and the book. I ran through the tape and I did most of it.
Did you? You mean the music tape?
Music.
Or the videotape?
Video.
I didn't give you music.
Yeah, you gave me gave us the videotape, put it on, and tried to do it.
No, but I mean I didn't give you music.
Okay, but
music.
Anyway, do you mind if we...
get another copy?
Well, I could give them the one I
no,
have.
No, hell no.
The book is excellent, but I really enjoyed the tape. So
you got it. You got it.
Don't get up.
Wait.
Now.
All right.
Dr. Schwartz, before
yeah.
you get up,
yeah.
would you
yeah.
like to play a little bit for
us? No. See, I got to tell you about that. First of all, shyness, which is the dominant negative, I would sit here in this living room, if we had four or five couples over here, pick up that guitar and just play background music, you know, and just enjoy myself. If they said, Lenny, why don't you play that Villa-Lobos prelude that I'm dead? Because then they're going to really listen to me. Since I haven't practiced in years, I don't want to play for anybody. It's nothing but mistakes. I'll practice, so next time we meet, I'll play your piece. But I remember having a wonderful guitarist here, Ray De La Torre, who was one of the best guitarists in the world. We got him at the night of a concert here and brought him back, and he played the guitar all night. But I remember he was drinking pretty good that night, too. He said, you know, if you play, don't drink. But you see, that's what a professional can do, but an amateur can't. You guys actually do this as a gift.
See, I think it's fascinating.
Do you really?
Yeah, the only bad thing about it is we're not allowed to talk about you. But I've had some wonderful sessions with people. Turn it into a pause.
That's wonderful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're really into a unique experience vis-a-vis another human.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's life. I think that the hurried physician, the internist, the surgeon, who don't really have, sometimes they give you a form to fill out for the history, really miss the crux of what's interesting about medicine.
And all the doctors I've ever seen spend 10 minutes or less on it.
Well, you're probably so healthy that nobody needs to spend most time.
But there's some satisfaction in it, but basically that's not why we do it. We do it because someone asked us to. So there's a program to sustain a oral history of selected people in the community. And whether that's constructive or not, it's not for us to judge.
They wouldn't have asked you unless they knew you guys could do the job.
Well,
they didn't choose you at random, I'm sure.
Well, they didn't choose you at random either. We don't pick the.
I wonder how they do, because you know I can think of 50 Jews around town that I'd rather interview them.
Yeah,
but you are prominent,
and you have
done many things.
And also,
done a lot of things.
And also, there's variety required.
Well, that's right. I would be a separate kind.
You are variety.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's not all bad. But
no, it's not all bad at all.
Let me get you that. Is there anything else? I have to make at least three videotapes in a week. You're still
yes.
I have to make three videotapes in the next month. The company that makes the hand weights has asked me to produce, choreograph three different kinds of tapes, the one you saw.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to start thinking about that. But actually, that's easy. That tape you saw, I got out of sick bed. I had the flu for 3 weeks. I got out of sick bed. We rehearsed it for 1 hour. We choreographed it in about 10 minutes.
Now, will you be making those tapes once you leave for Florida? Are you leaving relatively soon?
We're going to Florida for a week in a couple of weeks. But then we come back and won't go till the first of the year. Then I hope we find the company finds a production company down there so that we can stay down there and do it.
Okay.
big job. Although that whole thing was made in one day. Mm-hmm. Sweaty business. Because when you do them down in Florida, it's hard to get the place air conditioned while you're working out. And sometimes you have to do repeats and all that. Well, I just got myself another Macintosh computer for down there, so I schlepped the computers back and forth. Now I have one for both places, so it makes life easier. And if we go down for just a week, I have a computer there. I don't bother taking it down for that, just for the winter. But working on the books is easy. That's really easy. And what I love to do is what I always hated to do, and that's edit. I'd rather edit than write, because in the editing, the good stuff comes out.
But that's quite a specialty, to be able to edit your own work.
The problem is, other people could edit better than I can. There's no question about it. Everybody can use an editor. The problem is that in an area as specialized as this, I'm all by myself. There's nobody in the technical area I can go to, because combined exercise is something that we've developed, and we've been the only ones to stick to. So I could get an editor to do my punctuation and my paragraphing and all that stuff, and grammar and whatnot. But they've got to be simultaneously good editors and expert in the field they're talking about, too. It's not a novel. Generally speaking, you don't have to be an expert in the content, because the content is a story. In this, it's a technical issue that you're trying to sell. Nonfiction is almost an argument. You make an argument, and you say it once, and you say it again, and you tell it again. You know, it's like, how do you teach a kid something? You tell them 500 times. It gets to be the same kind of problem. If you're trying to break through a new idea in let's say, a field like fitness, there is great resistance. That's a word that, by the way, is relevant in terms of psychiatry, too. Essentially, the Freudian analyst trying to teach the patient about themselves, has the job of overcoming their natural resistance to knowing about themselves. Same if you had somebody who walks for exercise, and they've been doing it for 30 years, you have a natural resistance that you encounter when you try to teach them something new, something that might give them physiologic advantages they hadn't heretofore enjoyed.
I've often wondered
what?
If knowing about too much about yourself
could be a handicap. Right. I think if you really know about yourself, it's never. You can't know too much about the world or too much about yourself. Now, I do think that the focus on psychologizing, the business of overworking, the business of introspection, endless queries about yourself, uses up energy that could be used to gather information of an adaptive nature, that is, information that allows you to cope better with your outside world. To me, that's one of the reasons I jumped from psychiatry to exercise, because exercise is an outside thing. The body is located outside the self. So in a sense, when you're dealing with your body, you're dealing, as I see it, with the closest element of the environment to you. It's part of your environment. So the body is split between the environment and the ego. See, your brain works your body, so there's no question it's attached to your ego. On the other hand, it belongs to the community. The energy that you can cook up to do all sorts of tasks in this world belongs, in conjunction with your fellow men, to your community. To say fitness is something you want to be because it'll keep you healthy and prevent heart attacks and all that's one thing. On the other hand, the community needs your energy. When people talk about giving to other people, you don't give with nothing. It takes energy to give. It takes energy, available energy, to either understand and or deliver what is required to accomplish a certain thing, whatever. A doctor without energy would be a lousy doctor. Well, I think the body is terribly important. See, I consider it part of the mind. I have begun to do a kind of crazy clinical research on a kind of thinking that I call motor thinking. Now, if you know anything at all about cerebral anatomy, the frontal hemispheres are related to judgment, to thinking about what you do before you move. And much of thinking is related to the preparation to action. And you can have all the preparatory thoughts in the world, but if you can't generate the ergs, dimes, and joules that it takes to get things moving, you're pretty helpless. So it takes a combination of an energy. You know, they used to talk about a healthy mind and a healthy body. Well, it makes a lot of sense. Because I have seen 500-pound men who made millions of dollars a year by dint of telephone calls every day. But when it came to living their lives, they really couldn't move. And the kinds of intelligence they developed was an amotoric kind of intelligence. In a sense, it required that they acquiesce to their own infirmity, you might say. And that's a very different, special kind of life. When I get a good idea, I almost have to get up and walk. I have to walk around. I have to move with it. And I don't understand why that doesn't afflict everybody, except I'm the queer one where it comes to that, I'm sure. An idea, many ideas, take motor, you say it's a kinesthetic, we call kinesthetic imagery to implement. That is, ideas that have motion inherent in them. I think we're moving from what used to be a motor world into a world that is preponderantly sensory. As the world gets bigger and more complicated, and more walls and buildings and fill out the visual space, that we become more and more like addicted to sensation. That's why people are watching 7 hours of television a day, because they don't really have what to do. I've been making a pitch lately for getting people to do all of their exercise while they watch television. I mentioned to you before, but that's more serious than it would sound. I think years ago the record business was escalating tremendously because they're selling kids records and kids would stretch out and listen to the input of music. Very few kids were taking piano lessons and learning how to do the work of making music themselves. They didn't identify themselves with the motor aspect of music. Instead, they were the receivers, sensation of one sort or another. That's why I guess I don't like to travel. I'm not a sightseer. I enjoy looking at a postcard, and I get as much from a postcard as being there. Says it's never like being there. Well, I've been there, and it's really not that much different as far as I'm concerned. It's all. Especially with somebody like me, and I think it's relevant to some of my visual disturbances myself. I don't have binocular vision. Because I don't have binocular vision, looking at a plain, two-dimensional a card, photograph, is good enough.
I don't care if I'm not good vision.
Because I'm amblyopic in my right eye. My right eye is essentially blind, legally blind. And so I cannot, because I have two distinct retinal images, I cannot form a binocular, a fused image. I think that's a lot to do with my own amateurish creativity. Is the fact that I've had a lot of sensory problems of my own to overcome. And in the process of doing that, I don't have to look to see. I can image to see. And there's some evidence that I image better than most people do. I don't know if better is the right word. I image in different ways than most people do. And I think that makes for cooking up ideas.